All right, so let's see. Just trying to figure out how well this layout plan worked. I moved up from the other room that was perfectly designed for it, but we'll try this. So really, this is going to be about a 30-second presentation. I know you're all tired, and so with that in mind, I stayed up playing volleyball last night to fill this shirt with the essence of Brian. And so rather than a, you know, an analytical verbal presentation, I'm just going to hold this by the door and you can take a good whiff on your way out and perceive everything I have to impart. Also kind of in the olfactory category, please stand up and go and get coffee refills during the presentation. If I see you nodding off, I may assign you to stand up and get a coffee refill. You're welcome to move around. I have you in kind of clusters so that you can have a little bit of interaction. You don't have to care about what other people are saying, but you can volunteer your ideas. So we're going to begin. I appreciate Matthew's incoherent introduction. That's about how I think about my life as well. Isn't there a little of something? And that's a little bit how the presentation is going to go. I'm going to throw a couple different pieces at you. I don't have much of a thesis. The kind of the question that I was most interested in remains unanswered for me. And that question is, to the extent that humans are capable of perception, which we'll have to establish whether they are, but to that extent, ought we to develop our sense of perception and how? I don't know. But we're going to do something else for this presentation because I didn't figure out the answer to that question. Let us begin, as we logically would, on page 6. I think it's 6 for you guys. It's a little different for me. I want a subheading called Recognizing Home of Yourself. So maybe after the bowl of fruit. Okay, so from the set of 4 passages, I would like to select Conjugal Love 3:16. And I won't be asking for readers because I'm the only one being recorded. So I want to start with this to just give us a picture of the smells of heaven and conjugal love. The enclosed path through which I went was lined with fruit trees, joined together by interlocking branches, thus forming an unbroken wall of trees on either side. Through this pathway, I entered the little garden, which exhaled a pleasant fragrance from its bushes and flowers. The bushes and flowers grew in pairs. And I learned that gardens of this sort appear around houses where weddings are being or have been celebrated. So there are quite a few passages in the writings that describe heaven and specifically marriage in terms of the fragrances. And so that's one thing I would like you to take from this is to get in your nose the sense of the smell of heaven. And by contrast, the smell of hell, which would be a little bit more like my t-shirt, perhaps. So now we'll go to the beginning. So we're going to talk about perception. And I would like you to begin with your group and say, how would you define or describe the word perception? Whether you were pulling on a dictionary or the writings or anything you want to pull on, what does perception mean? So I'm going to give you a little chance to talk with your group. Figure out what is the definition or description of perception.
Thank you.
So, well, you should have sat where you were assigned. All right, my turn again. So I am doing the presentation style that bugs me, which is to give you the start of a conversation and pull you back out before you get anywhere. And we'll do that today. It's the only response to keeping you awake at this point in the week. But so you would be on pretty safe ground no matter where you decided to go with a definition of perception, because it's a very broad kind of word. Even as used in the writings, it ranges from just what you feel, what you sense. I got it, or I perceived it, I felt it, and any kind of our senses could be described as perceiving, naturally or spiritually. So it does have a very broad kind of definition, but it also has some narrow meanings as well. So let's start with Exodus at the top, page 1, because we need to turn to the origin of everything, which is the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, "Take sweet spices, stakte," and I don't know how to pronounce these things, "onycha, galbanum, and pure frankincense with these sweet spices. There shall be equal amounts of each. You shall make of these an incense, a compound according to the art of the perfumer, salted, pure, and holy. And you shall beat some of it very fine, and put some of it before the testimony in the tabernacle of meeting, where I will meet you. It shall be most holy to you. But as for the incense which you shall make, you shall not make any for yourselves, according to its composition. It shall be holy for the Lord. Whoever makes any like it to smell it, he shall be cut off from his people." So it said of that design that they weren't to make incense. They were allowed other forms of incense for themselves, or fragrance. So this starts with the Lord's incense. The holy incense to the Lord expresses something about Him from which all pleasant fragrances flow. Holiness and goodness belong to the Lord. Anything else in creation simply receives. And so that's why this incense is centered in the goodness of the Lord. And we aren't to claim in any way that fragrance for ourselves. We do not smell sweet of ourselves. But in turning to Psalm 45, the Lord can reward us or give us this sweetness of odor according to our involvement in righteousness. "You love righteousness and hate wickedness. Therefore God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness more than your companions. All your garments are scented with myrrh and aloes and cassia." So the Lord can impart a sweet smell to us, which again is His goodness, that sweetness. But as many things are, there's a combination of goodness and truth. So here's a functional definition. As I understand perception, it can happen on all sorts of levels, at a celestial level, a spiritual level, a physical level, this quality of perception. So it is a recognizing in awareness a quality of goodness. And maybe those words recognizing and awareness are even a little too strong. Maybe it's just a slight awareness, because it's not always very conscious the way we perceive things. Sometimes it's just, but it is a coming into some kind of awareness. And it comes from a goodness or a quality of goodness that allows us to become aware of something. So the awareness is always supported by truths. So perception is more on the truth side of the equation, but it stems from a recognition that becomes possible from goodness. And that can happen on any level. It's the goodness of the thing that allows us to see the thing, recognize its quality. And it's an inward knowing, a knowing that flows from within, really from the Lord, resonating something of goodness within us that allows us to recognize something outwardly, as compared with other kinds of knowing which come outwardly through information and knowledge and sit in our memory and allow us to know something that way. Okay, and so here's a little in AC 3575, just saying again that odor and smelling has to do with perceiving, and I've clipped up this quote too much. But it's talking about Isaac smelling Jacob and smelling him as Esau, because of the the fake that they were pulling on him, but it was the truth of good. So again, there's one of those truth and good phrases. It's the truth that flows, that the effinescence of good that comes out of the goodness, but in truth that is allows us to perceive. The off-gassing of goodness allows us to perceive. Again, speaking of how it's, you know, what is the nose, what is smell, what does that correspond to? There are spirits especially associated with the nostrils. And one interesting little addition is that the nostril spirits are called perceptions. Okay, so we should be connecting perception with smell. And they have a perception, a more general kind, a general sense of the state of society, and less particular. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about what it is exactly that the smell perception has to do with, but it has to do with a general sense, a general state of the room, a state of the person, state of society, awareness in a more general way. So I'm just going to leave that there. We're just going to try to piece together a couple ways of distinguishing this sense from our other senses. All right. So we've kind of described perception at a heavenly level. Perception is perception a lost sense? Some of you will be familiar with the most ancient people who enjoyed this beautiful sense of perception. So is this an extinct sense with the human race? So that's one question to determine with your group. And the other is this a sense exclusive to women? Some of you may know that women are particularly prone to perception. Is this sense exclusive to women? So is it dead and gone with the most ancient church? And is it exclusive to women? Please determine this with your groups. Question wrong. Wait, did any group get this wrong? Didn't read ahead, that group over there? All right, thank you. There is with every person a capacity of perceiving, whether a thing is so or is not so. So, and yet this very number will now modify that. But there is with everyone the capacity. So for whatever reason, we still have noses on our face, which suggests that we still have this capacity for perceiving. The capacity of drawing a conclusion within himself or herself, or in his or her own mind, causes a thing to be perceived. Okay? So that's a kind of general definition. Drawing a conclusion within yourself is perceiving the thing. The capacity is utterly impossible unless there is an influx from the spiritual world. The spiritual which flows in and causes perception has been obscured and almost extinguished by the delights of the love of the world and of self. So as usual, we've gummed it up by our interest in the love of self and love of the world, almost extinguished. Doesn't say quite extinguished. The person who would have perception in spiritual things must be in an affection of truth from good and must continually long to know truths. So I did say I didn't really figure out how we should pursue the regaining of this sense. But here's an answer. If you want to regain a sense of perception, you must be in an affection for truth from good and long to know truths. In contrast or in striving against your natural love of self and the world. So I see two hands.
Different kinds of perception. One is that you hear something and you the possibility of perceiving whether it's true or not. And the other one is just sort of right out of the loop.
Okay.
You see someone, my wife could do this, okay. But she would see someone and she would think he's a creep.
Okay.
She thought, she felt that she perceived this.
Okay. Great, and I'm going to repeat that a little bit just so people, maybe there's at least two kinds, a more straightforward one where I just hear something and I recognize, yeah, that's true. That's a kind of perception versus with nobody telling me anything, I just become aware of. I know something about a situation or a person. And he gave the example of a woman perceiving a guy to be a creep. So we may come back to that type of perception. So there's an you know, and it may be that we have an easier time with the first than that more broad one.
Don't we all have affection for truth by a very fact of living life? That's the remnant of the Lord
in the Bible? No. It's probably so. I mean, even this passage, we have almost extinguished. Everybody has the capacity. So there is this back and forth of, you know, I read in this that most of us, most of the time, have next to no spiritual perception, and yet, if we had zero affection for truth, zero influx, you know, we would cease to exist. But I do. All the questions. Okay. Great. All right. So he was arguing the fact that we're still alive means we all have some affection for truth. Probably true. But I really hear in this passage an ought. You know, this is something one can do or fail to do. Have an affection for truth and long to know, continuously long to know truths. That's not something that comes naturally to most of us. Okay, this is an interesting point that I've not thought about. Is perception especially connected to the reception of remains? Partly because that process is often unconscious, and perception is often barely conscious. And so maybe the perceiving is part of receiving remains, and at our spiritual state, we're mostly unaware of that, but it could still be happening. I like that point. Great. Thank you for the optimists in the room. Another reminder that we're designed for heaven. We are given an affection for truth, you know, a natural curiosity among children. Like, this is, again, part of the design. The Lord hasn't left us bereft of this quality that could pursue perception. Okay, so we may end up back with memory and remains and subtle affections. I'll take questions, whatever. I can be here all morning to get through my material, so go ahead. So maybe the day seven, the celestial stage of regeneration is still available to us. We're told about it for that reason. If you guys go ahead and shout out your comments, then I don't need to repeat them.
I'll shout. I think it's really easy to ignore perception, especially when we want our idea to be right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But perception can be very easy to ignore.
Great. So our selfish nature makes us resist the truth in any forms, and the perception is the easy version of truth to just stuff and ignore. I didn't even hear that. I have no awareness of that, as compared with what your parents dictate to you. Heard something else in there. So it raises the question, what is to blame? Is the quality of your perception, your gut sense of things, is that fatally flawed, or at least seriously flawed? Or is it our willingness to listen to it, that the facility is still working and we just are unaccustomed to listening, or rather smelling? The creep, okay.
Because I think perception of something is true, that we're talking about that, existence is a merit truth. We can talk about truth without goodness. And I think the danger in just focusing on the truth would be removing the goodness, and then it becomes a judgmental perception, which is not really perception.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because we can talk about a set of stereotypes or
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm thinking there has to be some kind of conjunction of good and truth that will help you have a perception that's not from you but from the world.
Okay. Great. I would love to spend more time on pursuing that. Talking about the ways that perception may be flawed, and I think it is often flawed, but the nature of smell physically and the nature of perception spiritually is more intricately connected between good and truth. It's very easy to be very truth-oriented through our eyes and even to an extent through our ears. Analytical, distance, you know, separated from application and people, that's easier. Even by the design of our brain and the way the senses go into the brain, it's easier to separate in those faculties where smell is more personal, more immediate. So I just wonder if the territory of perception forces us to wrestle more directly with connecting good and truth or falsity and evil in some cases. So I would like a turn for a while. So I will plow ahead. I do want to say that one of the easiest ways to get a definition or an understanding of perception is to look at those passages that contrast the celestial most ancients with the people who followed. That's one way of distinguishing. And so the perception of the most ancients was inward, it was immediate, it was nuanced and detailed, it was full of life and sensitive and so forth, whereas the spiritual mechanism which follows the conscience is clunky and laborious. It goes in through our ears and into our memory and gradually gets built into something that the Lord can then use and give us the voice of conscience, and it is still constantly under attack from fallacies as we take ownership of trying to figure it out and understand it on a very truth-oriented kind of focus. So we're just going to read one passage from TCR here, two passages, only one of them from TCR. The reason left to itself is incapable of seeing. What then is to be done? There is no other way than for man to go to the Lord God, the Savior, and under his auspices read the word, for he is the God of the word, and man will then be enlightened and will see truths, which reason also will acknowledge. So this, connecting with the passage before, let's see. Okay, going towards the end of that AC 5937. If we have the affection for truth from good and long to know truths, thereby his or her intellectual is enlightened first, and when the intellectual has been enlightened, then it is given to him or her to perceive inwardly. Okay, so the describe here is the intellectual has to be enlightened, and then it is given to perceive. If our intellectual is off, we are not really able to get much perception. So then the second passage says, how would our intellectual become enlightened, because we can't figure it out through our own reason? Only by going to the Word and reading it under the auspices of the Lord. Because you can read the Word all day long and get very little if you're not reading it humbly for the Lord. So that's kind of the answer. Work on enlightening the intellectual, and that can guide and moderate our otherwise flawed perception. Okay, moving on to the next passage. Falsity within factual knowledge is what most of all molests those who belong to the spiritual church. Who belongs to the spiritual church here, or aspires to at least? Hands up. There are no celestials in this room. I'll go ahead and make that spiritual judgment. And what most molests us is falsity within factual knowledge, because we don't have any perception of truth that springs from good, only a knowledge of truth derived from religious teaching. Now, there are caveats we could introduce there, but it's laborious for us. We grapple and wrestle with our minds, and we're easily molested by falsity because we don't immediately see the difference. We're not like, oh, that is dog poop and that is a rose. It's like, oh, interesting idea. Oh, that's an interesting, oh, I wonder. And we work on it with our minds. And some of us, maybe some male among us, are particularly inclined to this problem of just loving ideas and knowledge and figuring it out with our brilliant brains with no effort to even stop and say, is that a good piece of knowledge? Is that a useful piece of knowledge? And I find myself particularly inclined this direction. This is unusual, but I've been carrying around a set of about 20 pages of rules to a board game, and reading it for fun. You know, just reading rules, and like that's how my mind works. I'm really not very inclined towards perception. You know, so I'll just leave that as a personal statement. But I'll throw out a little jab at the Supreme Court. I don't know the technical terms, but you can simplistically divide the practice of law into the people who read the law, study the words and the law and the precedent, and just, you know, and look how is this to be properly understood, and then pronounce a judgment interpreting the law. Okay, that would sound like a logical approach for the courts. Or there's the law and the situations, and which way is public culture going? What do I feel? How can I look at and, you know, loosely interpret these words or make it fit into this little beautiful pattern and pronounce judgment on what I think how society should look? You know, a from the bench kind of legislation. So that's caricatured badly, but the point is, for people in our society who have jobs that are supposed to be technical and specific, do we want them trusting their perception of what is good and how it should be, or do we want them carefully and slavishly reading the law? Do we want our ministers just, you know, how do I feel, what should I preach to, and make it up, or do we want them kind of slavishly going back to the text, if we had to contrast? And our answer to that is partly an answer to how much we trust perception in our society. And I am not sure that we should trust it very fully, but should we spite the nose off our fate, you know, just be done with it, throw it out entirely, as my own natural inclination goes. All right, another flaw of perception is, let's say I am very perceptive, and I thought deeply about a subject, and then I went and played volleyball. Is it sufficient to share my shirt to communicate the information? How do we communicate what it is we care about? Let's say we enjoy a pretty good personal perception. It's still very hard to share that perception unless we run it back through our verbal centers and a more cerebral part of ourselves. So I don't know that perception is to be blamed for that, but it's a short suit in terms of communication. Now, we are going to talk about how humans do communicate with smell much more than we realize. But we do need those more, let's say, intellectually separated senses. All right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or just talking off the top of his head kind of thing.
mm-hmm. somewhere, and of course it can move about. But somewhere in there, I think enlightenment.
Yeah, it sounds like a false contrast, which I think do we want somebody who I can read you the whole Arcana Celestia, and I don't know if any of it's any good or anything. Like, all I'm doing is reading it. Like, that's not the point either. You know, we don't need robots. We need enlightenment. We need a sense of how does this apply in life. And
also about the Supreme Court thing. I agree with how you laid things out, but there's a different use of perception I hope the judges mm-hmm. are using, which is I'm nitpicking the words here, mm-hmm. and I'm coming up with a conclusion based on the nitpicky definitions mm-hmm. of the words of the law. But wait, that doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the meaning behind those words. That's mm-hmm. not what was intended. If I nitpicky, I can make anything true.
Okay.
I'm going to go with my perceived greater mm-hmm. purpose of that law.
Yeah, so, and we use that in all different, you know, in parenting and teaching or all these different fields where we might be focused on the rightness of the situation, and then if we're willing to say that something's a little off, like that's perception checking the other process and creating a balance.
Very few people have a comprehensive knowledge of anything they're looking at, and they are guided by their perception of the situation. Mm-hmm. Instinctive perception, mm-hmm. and then instinctual bias, even when they think they are nitpicking down and they're
Great. I love that point. Most of the time we're faking. Most of the time we speak as if we are using our sight and maybe our hearing and articulating a point and defending our judgment or our case, when in reality we're relying on a kind of bias, set of biases and intuition, because it's easier, faster. We're usually not equipped nor disciplined enough to really. So in some ways we use a kind of pseudo natural perception much more than we might even admit, because our society again doesn't like to admit it, and so there's lots and lots of research about bias and how we retroactively have a reason for why it is that we are doing what we were going to do anyhow. So it's a great point. And yet that quality, again, the intuitive sense, if that sense is healthy, is the superior sense. So just looking at spiritual experiences here at the top of probably your page 2. I don't know if it's at the top. They who have a perception of justice. Okay, this is now talking just on the natural level of our brain. It's not really talking about spiritual and celestial perception. Bottom of page what?
Two.
Bottom of page 2. They who have the perception of justice can at once, from a few things which they know, perceive whether a thing is just or not. That's not fair. That isn't right. I know it. I look at the situation. I perceive that it is not just. But they who have the perception of rectitude are not able to do so in this way, but from the laws and such things as they have learned. It is evident that the former is more excellent than the latter. Okay, so some of us, like myself, are more inclined to like, what do I know? How can I piece together the argument? It's much slower and clunkier. And so if your sense of justice is actually working and healthy, that's the superior sense. This isn't right. So again, and not to toss out any sense of the intuitive. All right, we're going to move along a little bit. Okay, so is smell connected to marriage? The special sense of conjugal love is the sense of touch. So that's disappointing for my talk. As somebody pointed out yesterday whose presentation was it yesterday? Matthews. He had the audacity to put conjugal love 166 up there. It's talking about women's perception of their husband, perceptions of their husband's states. Okay, there's the sense of smell. It says, women's recognize the husband's affections through the sight, the touch, and sound. Also not helpful for my talk. We do have conjugal love 49 that invokes the nostrils shunning wandering lust as an offense to the nostrils. And we have many, many vivid descriptions of the smell of conjugal love and the smell of licentious love. So it does bring it in. And also in conjugal 2:10, that's saying touch is the special sense of marriage. The love of joining oneself with one's partner has the sense of touch. It's mentioned the special purpose of the other senses. And this sense is the common one, the sense of touch, is the common one of all the senses, and so draws contributions from the rest. People know that this love brings all the aforementioned senses into confederation with it and appropriates their pleasures to itself. Smelling is in marriage. It's appropriated, its pleasures, its contribution is brought into marriage. And I think its connection with perception has obvious connections to the types of perceptions described in marriage. But it is curious that it's not given special special place. All right, so I'm going to try to skim a little bit. Helen Keller, what good New Church presentation wouldn't quote Helen Keller one or two times? Called it the fallen angel of the senses. Obviously, she had particular reason to care about smelling, but she called out the way that our culture is down on the sense of smell and perception. So we pay lots of money to cut up our faces and shrink the size of our nose, by and large. There are other things we do with it, but I don't think this is universally true, and I don't think it, in terms of all cultures and all history, in terms of the aesthetic of the right size nose, I think it's kind of telling that we now shrink our nose down. We are also a culture that washes and deodorizes and showers daily, if not twice daily, which has no health benefit. You only need to shower like every 2 weeks or something to derive its health benefit. Seriously. So we're kind of obsessed with obliterating natural smells and then perfuming and covering over with various artificial and controlled smells. We don't really want to, we certainly don't want people perceiving our state quality, and we don't necessarily want to perceive other people's either. So we kind of blot it out, which is, again, curious. So again, this is the same woman. I think she looks perfectly lovely in the left-hand picture, but she looks more magazine-ish in the right. All right, so we're going to skip the word association games. Yes?
You might give a thought. Have we totally obliterated smell from our worship? I don't want to invite a discussion. I just throw that thought out.
Thank you. And I'll just mention that that some pool of Catholics who are largely moved away from the Catholic Church still fondly remember the Catholics' full sensory approach to worship. And you know, it's kind of a... Yeah. All right. So let's do some nose facts. Anosmia is the loss of the ability to smell. I forget the percentages of how many people this affects, but I read a story about a guy who used to sell beer, craft beer, small brews, and he loved it. You know, he could sell it because he knew that, you know, the nuance. He could speak to and describe the beers and the aromas and so forth. And he had an accident. And lost his sense of smell. And it took him, you know, through the recovery from the accident, it took him a couple months to realize that he lost his sense of smell. But then he started to put together the pieces, and he described what he had lost. So one thing is, people would say, oh, well, you've got these kids, and he's like, well, yeah, I don't have to smell their diapers anymore. But he also said, but he knows how his son smelled as an infant, and he has no idea how his daughter smells as an infant. And he was aware of the change between these two children. So smell, which we typically ignore, adds all of the interest to taste. You know, taste is a blunt, you know, keep us alive. It's got about 5 or 6 basic things that it can recognize, salty and sweet and the, like, in-your-face, eat to stay alive kind of senses, but none of the things we particularly appreciate in food and drink come through our tastes. Or I like to speak in areas I really know nothing about. So if I say things too strongly, I apologize. But the nuance, you know, in a fine wine or in beer or in barbecue sauce and all those things comes through our nose. Because where we have 5 or 6 basic tastes, we have 10,000, if not more, smell combinations. So if you want nuance and depth, you need your nose. All right, so there's a lot of dispute about the sense of smell. We are assumed to have 100 to 400 receptors in our nose, but there's a fair degree of difference between the type of receptors in one human's nose from another. And the way we get more than 100 to 400 smells is by combinations. You know, we can detect very small concentrations in the air, and the way that the combinations come into our receptors is interpreted in this breadth in our brain or our perception. So they debate about how many smells we can identify, but professional perfumers can identify and recall in the neighborhood of 1,500 smells, distinct smells. And there's debate between, you know, 10,000 up to 1,000,000 different smells that we could identify. I mean, most people say around 10,000. But most of us can't. So this is something interesting about smelling. When we ignore a sense, we don't develop it. But professionals in the field there's an incredible difference between a professional nose versus an amateur in a way that there probably isn't with our eyesight and our other senses. They've also found that amateurs who do smell tests, you know, to study different aspects of smell, you don't even have to train them, you just have to put them through a couple rounds of tests, and then they start ruining the tests because they get good at smelling in a way that most of us aren't. So it's a very trainable sense, which is interesting to me. You know, if it's a lost spiritual art, perception, is it very trainable in the same kind of way? Another thing about the design, the channels from your nasal receptors, your olfactory nerves, go both to the frontal lobes, which would be more consciousness, but also directly to the limbic system, which is memory and emotion. You know, and emotion is connected with the memory. So if you trigger emotions, that's where you build these memories and you build the gut feel. Okay, and the nose goes right there. And it's further from the language areas of the brain, so it's harder to describe a scent and put it into words, and we usually go back to visual images as well. You know, a bright smell or something like that. So again, it's further from the verbal and closer to the memory emotional centers. What else do we want to say about this? Women and men. Who's better smelling?
Smelling.
Women in both senses. Do you need to talk with your group? I don't. Women are. So who's better at perception? Women, generally, theologically, experientially. Generally, we'd say women. And women are scientifically, demonstrably, consistently better at smell as well, the physical sense. They have more olfactory nerves. Even pre-puberty hormones, girls outperform boys. And then once you throw in those hormones as well, particularly pregnancy cycles, there's a huge range in female sensitivity, but consistently women are much more perceptive with their noses. So a lot of the tests on what are the capabilities of human smell, they use women because they want to see the furthest extent. So when we find a conclusion, it's not always certain whether it applies generally or just to women. All right, so now I want to get into a little smell trivia. There's big money behind discovering and isolating human pheromones. You know, there are species that are very smell-oriented. You give a pig pheromone to another pig, and they're in a sexual reproductive mindset immediately through the smell. Are humans driven that way? We have not identified for sure that we do have a sexual attraction pheromones. But we have found different kinds of things that, where we do communicate nasally on different areas. And yet, perfumers are putting pheromones into their perfume. Sometimes pig and deer pheromones. So is that going to heighten your sex appeal by having pig pheromones in your? And they also put in human hormones, hoping that those that have a airbound effect. But again, do you want any human pheromone? Do you want the scent of some random stranger that has nothing to do with you? I mean, is that going to heighten your particular attraction for who you are? But at least they sell the perfume. All right. So, how much can we communicate through our smell? If a human is given different air samples, I don't know how many they're given, but and told which of these represents your spouse, which of these is your spouse's scent or your child's scent, can we correctly pick the right air sample? Is yes or no? Can you go out on limb? Yes. Most people, most of the time, can identify, and they won't necessarily be aware, and you can't describe what your spouse smells like, but we can do it. What if it's a stranger? What if a woman is given a child to hold for an hour that they're not related to? Here's a baby. We all like the way babies smell for an hour, and then the baby's taken away, and then they're given several essences of baby to smell. Can they identify which baby they were holding? Yes. I don't know if men can, but women can. And then they also do these studies where they give females male sweat to smell and males female sweat to smell. How does it affect our stress systems to smell the sweat of the opposite sex? Gags? It reduces our stress indicators. It calms us. It makes us at ease to smell the sweet smell of the opposite sex. It doesn't say stinky sweat necessarily, but it does reduce it. They've also done experiments where they have a male exercise hard in the gym and produce a sweaty shirt, and have other males jump out of airplanes for the first time and produce a sweaty shirt. And then they give the two females to smell, and they test how the women react, and they do better at word problems and stuff that involve a kind of alertness. They do worse at emotional recognition through visual, like looking at a face, is this person angry or sad or whatever? They do worse at that when they smell the fear sweat from men who jumped out of an airplane as compared with normal sweat. They perform at their normal levels. So it affects how well they perform. Women can detect disgust and fear in male sweat, even subconsciously. They smell it and their face gives a flash of emotive response to the correct signal in the sweat. Males, when given a bowl of water, a liquid that is unidentified and they smell it, their testosterone and sex appeal or sexual attraction goes down when it is female tears. And they have no idea what it is, but it's a turnoff for men to smell female tears. So we are communicating through our smells, mostly unaware of it. So it's still working, even if we have been ignoring it. I think I'll skip some of these other, but there are interesting studies. One thing about the way smell works is it chemically interacts with our nerves in a way that the other smells, with the exception of taste, don't. And so it has a direct physical interaction with us that gets again back to what is perception? Perception is our quality responding to the quality of something else. Whereas sight is much more distant, analytical, discerning, looking at perspective, comparing. Whereas our smell, it's a gut response. This is who I am responding to what the situation is. So perception is unavoidable in some ways. You walk into a room and you perceive a smell, you can't look away, or I mean, you can plug your nose, but you do respond. But that still doesn't answer the question of whether your perception is reliable. And so part of what reliable perception depends on is your quality. So angels have a very reliable perception because their quality is good. And so they smell their way. They follow their nose to heaven. They recognize correctly what is beautiful and sweet smelling and what is horrific. Whereas evil spirits follow their nose and they find something beautiful and sweet smelling that corresponds with their being and they love it and it is piles of filth and excrement. So should we trust our nose when we get to the spiritual world, or should we trust our nose now? Because it will lead us home. It will lead us to who we are. So if who we are is desirable, then we can go ahead and trust those perceptions. If we are a little bit insecure about our own quality and whether we are good, then maybe we need to find other ways of checking or modifying that perception. All right, so I'm going to give you another interactive exercise to
just
keep you awake.
Yep. I know some people have left, but if you have an appointment with one of the youth groups, you should be on your way there. And
All right, thank you. So if we were to have started at 8:50, an hour is now up. So you are free to leave, and I'm just... what do we have next? Do we have discussion groups?
We have discussion at 10 o'clock is discussion groups and the second lecture.
In the second lecture.
At 11 o'clock, we need to be down at the solar house for our parade to closing worship.
Okay, thank you. 11 o'clock at the solar house for a parade. At 10 o'clock, starting individual discussions. So, at this point, anyone who likes can pretend that they have kids to go and pick up and leave. I'm going to talk for another about 10 minutes, and then you can form discussion groups. At the back, there are a set of questions to just stimulate these kind of question, discussion, if you'd like to take and find a group. So, you may quietly or loudly leave. As I take another 10 minutes. Yes? Yes, discuss till 11 or be at the solar house at 11. So, in your groups, I would like you to share a strong smell memory, something that stood out to you and affected you and is still kind of present if you have one. One for me is arriving in West Africa, in Ghana, and I just it was foreign, so that's part of why it made an impact. But they have a lot of wood smoke, wood cooking, and so there's a lot of sort of acrid smoke smell in the air, but different than American woods, and I mean related to a camping smell, but and they have markets. I mean they have little grocery stores, but most are in an open air market where very few things are wrapped up and packaged away or refrigerated, and so you interact with all the things you're shopping. And so it was actually worse culture shock to come back to the US and be in this neon lit huge grocery store with choices and choices all packaged up and refrigerated, so you had no interaction with what you were shopping. So that's just the set of West African smells is something that still stays with me. So Share a smell memory, if you will, with your group. Try to wrap up with just a couple closing thoughts. Smell tends to choose sides. Okay, we argue about visual art, oral art, in our aesthetics. We have smell aesthetics as well. We might dispute over what smells good and what smells bad, and it is very connected with who we are and our own memory set. However, smells choose sides in terms of, it's hard to find a neutral smell. We respond good and bad, which is why throughout history, smell has been associated with evil and good. It's not it's not just out there, it's good and evil. And so our incenses and perfuming of dead bodies, or the thought that saints smell sweet, or these kind of associations with holiness and goodness, versus the toxic, the decaying, the unhealthy, the evil. These aren't just known in the new church because of their correspondences. This is still our cultural associations. But in order for our nose to lead us to a good place, we have to cultivate who we are, so that when we follow our nose home, it is a home that we want to be in, because it will reflect us. We can't but follow our nose in the spiritual world. You know, in this world, our sight is a very important sense, and it remains. But in the other world, your associations, your comfort, your horror, your familiarity depend on your breathing and your nose. So you want to cultivate a good sense of it. The smell, as I've said, is very trainable. Dogs have more sensors than we do, but not a whole lot more. You know, maybe twice, maybe three times as many. We probably have enough material to do much more impressive things than we realize. It's an exception, but there's a top smeller who has passed a drug test, a dog sniffing drug test that not all dogs pass, by smelling cell phones through closed paint cans, and by smelling a tiny swab of cocaine in a pile of 27 books, knowing which book had this just a brush. Probably he's exceptional, but humans can also be taught to track another human across a field by smell. We don't generally do that, we're not aware of it, but I think there's a lot of depth of potential in this underappreciated sense. And so what is the value? Why would we want to cultivate that? What is smell and perception about? It's about recognizing home, the familiar, who we are, our people, our mate. It's about warning. It's much quicker than sight. You know, you walk into a room and something's off and you have to get out because of something toxic in the environment or the creep guy. If that intuition is working, the smell is going to be much quicker than a sight of, like, he's wearing this, and I don't like the way he's walking, and I don't like the way... No, if your gut says get away, that's going to do a lot more for you. Why do they use drug sniffer dogs? Because they can't look through every single thing going through the airport. Smell is quick. It just gets it in a kind of way. So it's very quick and immediate. It gives you warnings about danger. It brings delight. I have a lot of delight through music and ears. And there are all sorts of, each sense has its own delights associated with it. But smell has this depth, again, connected back to who you are. This depth of enjoyment that it adds to taste and other things. and adds to your friendships and your family, because we are smelling each other. We are communicating various kinds of emotional interaction. We are interacting emotionally through our smell, usually unaware of it. But also thinking of perception, it adds nuance. You know, think of the most ancients versus conscience and our laborious effort to study. As we develop that perception, we look at a truth, and rather than being like, okay, that is true, and that satisfaction and delight, we instead get past the is it true, or, you know, how is it true, and hesitating at the threshold of wisdom, and we walk into the temple of wisdom and we just breathe it in, and so we see all the nuance and application, and it's just worlds fuller than the more limited analytical approach can be. And I think it's also much more deeply satisfying. I love the analytical, intellectual approach to truth. It's delightful, and you know things through it, but you never really know them in a very satisfying way, in the way that perception, or that you're, when you know something because of influx from within, that kind of knowing where you're entirely grounded, and it's that kind of knowing versus I figured it out and it seems right according to my best thinking and I know it. It's just a different experience. So I think it offers us a great deal more satisfaction. What is my closing thought? Oh yes, back to marriage. The picture of the apples there, the good and the bad. Smell is connected to its off-gassing of, again, of essence, of who somebody is or what a situation is. And so it has this life cycle. Smells, I put some lavender on your pages a couple hours ago, and it's mostly dissipated. I mean, you can still detect it, but especially the high notes, what they call on smell, the high notes are pretty well gone by now, because it's living. You know, it has a life cycle, and so the most sweet, beautiful smelling stage of fruit is not long before the decaying, stinky smell of fruit. It's dynamic. So again, you can have that. You can bring that dynamism into perception of your partner and your marriage. You can use it to spurn and reject wandering lusts as an offense to the nostrils. That kind of visceral fleeing, which is not where most of us start with regard to lust and adultery, right? We it kind of smells sweet to a lot of us. So this is something that the nose has to be trained to do, to respond that way. But it can be used that way. And there was one other marriage connection, but I think I'll have to leave that to you to figure out. All right, yeah, I think I'll just end there. Final thoughts if people have something burning before we again release you. All right.
What's going